It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
As leaders in the church, you sometimes find yourself talking about subjects that really don't sound like leadership subjects. And it's my goal to create a comprehensive resource for LDS leaders so that whatever problem or concern they run into, they can find helpful perspective at leadinglds.com. I have posted a variety of interviews around the topic of pornography addiction. Again, this doesn't sound like a leadership topic, but if you have served in leadership positions in the LDS church, whether in the youth program or with adults, it's a topic you have to address in one way or another. This is why I have published a series of interviews and articles around this topic, in order to help leaders have more education and resources that will help those they lead. One area around the dangers of pornography that isn't talked about as much is the impact pornography can have on children. You know, the younger the child, the more impressionable they are, and just because they haven't yet experienced feelings that accompany teenage puberty doesn't mean parents and leaders can avoid conversations about the dangers of pornography. In this interview, I talk with Kristen Jensen, the author of Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Pornproofing Today's Young Kids. She is a native of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and currently resides in Richland, Washington. She was educated at Brigham Young University, served a mission in Portugal, and is currently serving as a gospel doctrine teacher in her ward. Her book is a read-aloud type of book that any parent can read to their children. With Kristen, we talk about the impacts pornography is having on young children, how early a parent should talk with children about sex and pornography, myths that church leaders should be familiar with, and what is the church leader's role in helping parents talk to their young children about pornography. I learned a lot in this interview, and I think you will too. Here is my interview with Kristen Jensen, author of Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. All right, welcome back to the Leading LDS podcast. I have Kristen Jensen on the line with me. How are you, Kristen?
I'm great.
Good. Well, you are.
Thanks so much for having me, Kurt.
Hey, absolutely. I'm excited to hear from you and hear about some of these projects you're working on, and most importantly, your book, which you've written, called "Good Pictures, Bad Pictures." How would you explain it? You're the author, Kristen. So, how would you explain this book?
Well, it's a read aloud book, so that parents can read it to young children, so that it opens up the conversation and sets the parents up as the experts and the source of information about this topic. It also gives a definition to children so they know what it is, they know how it affects their brain, and thirdly, they have a plan to use for when they're exposed to it, which is inevitable in this world.
Cool.
So they know exactly what to do. We call it the Can-Do Plan, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it later.
Yeah.
But this is really an important thing to arm children with, so that they can, because we can't be there in every situation, so they know exactly how to respond.
Cool. Well, let's learn just a little bit about you and your background, Kristen, before we jump into the details of the book. You currently live in Richland, Washington, but that's not where you claim your hometown is that right?
I'm not sure I have a hometown, but when I was growing up, I started out in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then my mother remarried, and we moved to Massachusetts.
Wow. It's a little bit different than Cheyenne.
I know. Right. It's kind of like the opposite of Cheyenne. So I often say I have cultural schizophrenia.
I see.
Because it's such a different place, but I loved it. I grew up in Arlington, I went to Arlington High School, and I was kind of an oddity there because I was Mormon, and there were very, very few others at the time. But I grew up going to the Cambridge ward, which had many wonderful people there that were very supportive of me and my sister. My mother wasn't going to church at the time. And we met many wonderful people whose names you might recognize. Mitt and Ann Romney were in our ward.
Oh, wow.
Ann was my maid advisor, and I babysat for their children, as well as, oh, there's so many people there. Richard Bushman was our stake president.
Oh, wow, cool.
He's the author of
Rough Stone Rolling, right? Is that
Rough Stone Rolling? Yes, yeah,
just to put things in context. I assume people know who Mitt Romney is, but
yeah. And Stephen and Margaret Realwhite, who are now in Hawaii. He's the president of BYU Hawaii.
Wow.
And I could go on and on. I'm kind of name dropping.
Sure. Well, hey, you're free to do that here.
It was a great place to grow up, actually. And you had to defend your faith. But grew up there. Then I went to BYU in Provo and ended up majoring in English because I couldn't do science or math. So, and then went on to serve a mission in Portugal. And I was really happy about that because I had actually taken Portuguese.
Oh, wow.
As my, I can't even remember, what was it, general ed requirement that you can take some kind of a language?
Now, was it just one mission back then, the whole country of Portugal, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Just one mission. The church had been there for, I think, 8 years, and they had gotten their first stake in Lisbon, and they were trying to get their second stake in Porto, which is in the northern.
My sister served in the Porto mission and before it was dissolved, but now I guess it's back, so.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah.
Well, wonderful, wonderful place. Love the people.
Cool.
And then I returned. I came back to BYU, actually finished my English major and then started my master's program in organizational communications.
Very cool.
In my last semester, when I had completely given up on needing my eternal companion, he showed up.
Oh, wow.
He showed up finally. Yay. And he gave a talk in church in sacrament meeting about the light and dark imagery in the Gospel of John. And I was so impressed with his knowledge of the scriptures.
Just a light topic
and understanding
there.
Symbolism and everything. I thought, oh, wow. So I went up and introduced myself to him. And one thing led to another. And we were dating. And then we were engaged. And so 5 months from the time we met, we got married. And we're coming up on our 30th anniversary.
Wow. Congratulations.
So it's worked out
good
so far.
Good. And what took you up to Washington?
Well, we actually started out in the Bay Area in California. That's where my husband was from. And then after 11 years there, he received an offer from Microsoft.
Mm.
So we went up to the Seattle area, and he worked for Microsoft for several years and then went on to work for other companies. And then we moved to Richland about 4 years ago, another job change, another opportunity. And it's worked out well because my oldest daughter, who came home from her mission to Oklahoma, she came home here, left from Seattle, came home here, and within a few weeks, she met her husband.
Oh, wow.
So we thought, well, there you go. That's
it's all working
that's,
out.
That's all working out.
Good.
And there's more sunshine here, so We're good. We like it.
Well, good. Well, that very interesting story, and it's amazing where life takes you. And I'll definitely need to get Mitt Romney's phone number from you so I can get him in for an interview. So,
yeah, unfortunately, I'm not really right. in contact. All I didn't realize when I was younger how important that
right.
was going
well,
to be.
He'd probably turn me down anyways. But anyways, you'd be an interesting person to talk leadership in the church about. But
oh yeah.
So what's your current calling in the church?
I'm a gospel doctrine teacher.
Wow, how do you like that?
And I love it.
Good.
It's great. It's like one of my absolute favorite callings in the church. Done a lot of different things, but I love it. It keeps you definitely studying the gospel and the scriptures all the time.
Cool.
And in our ward, we have such a large ward here that we have two gospel doctrine classes.
Oh.
So
great.
And because there's quite a large percentage of LDS people in the Tri-Cities mm-hmm. here in this area. And we have our own Columbia River Temple, which is just, I could walk there in 5 minutes. So
wow.
It's a beautiful little temple. We love it. If a session starts at 6, we can leave here at 4:15. Get there.
You might.
Get all ready and be in the session on time and no worries.
Wow.
So,
well, that's
that
cool.
Very, very nice.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned, as I invited you onto this podcast, you know, this is a leadership podcast in the context of the LDS Church. And, you know, I think maybe a lot of listeners are wondering why this is suddenly turning into a, you know, pornography prevention podcast. And it's not really, but I know as I'm currently serving as a bishop, the concern and frustration that pornography can be in many people's lives, many people that are addicted to it. And now in this day and age when it's so easy to come upon. And also with the Utah Coalition Against Pornography, their conference is coming up in Salt Lake City, Utah, on the 18th of April in 2015. We're recording this at the beginning of April. And so I sort of wanted to highlight that event and also sort of just put a package together of different perspectives of this issue. And we've had people come on talking from perspective of, you know, couples dealing with it, others from the perspective of spouses that are married to somebody addicted to pornography. And so you kind of come onto this podcast with an interesting perspective of how it impacts the lives of children and maybe some strategies and so forth. And so as we go through this, any places you feel like, I guess I'd almost encourage you to imagine speaking to a room full of bishops who are, you know, concerned about this, and even parents, you know, most bishops are parents. And I don't know, it's a tough balance to know what proactive measures should a bishop take in a ward to not only help the children, but also educate the parents so they have resources. And so I hope from this interview, people can at least know about your book, some of the organizations you're involved in, and then have an additional idea of where they can go to get some questions answered and some ideas and strategies. So let's start from the top. What on earth influenced you to write a book about pornography in relation to young children?
Good question. I will start out by saying I never wanted to have to deal with this topic. In fact, I remember distinctly telling the Lord that this is, you know, as I became more knowledgeable about this issue, that I did not want to have anything to do with it, and that he was just going to have to find someone else to fight that battle, and I would do other things. I'd be happy to do other things. And so there's a lesson. Don't ever tell the Lord that you don't want to do something. He'll find a way to get you to do it. And but after we had moved to Richland, just a short time, I got a call from a new friend who told me a very devastating story about her 17-year-old son who had been sexualized at a young age through molestation. And many children, unfortunately, in this day and age, are sexualized through molestation, but also through pornography.
Mm.
So it kind of turns on that part of their brain, and they become very curious and interested in it. as did this young man. And he sought out pornography and became addicted to it. And then, because children are so imitative, he began to perpetrate on his younger brothers and sisters. So he didn't get the baby, and he didn't get the two-year-old, but the four-year-old on up to the 14-year-old, he molested.
Wow.
And I can only imagine the trauma and the pain from that when they found out about that.
Yeah.
So she told me, we talked till early in the morning, and finally I went to bed. I woke up the next morning, and I just had this question pulsing in my brain, which was, who will help me warn the young children? And I thought, I don't know. Who will? Remember, Lord, I didn't want to have to deal with this. But I felt compelled to search for a children's book. I was sure there were umpteen different books that you could read to a child that would explain what pornography was, why it was dangerous and harmful to your brain, and what you can do when you're faced with it, you know, a plan. But I didn't find anything like that. And I just felt compelled to begin writing it. And in fact, I gave up a full-time job offer to do so. I had this offer, but I knew that if I took it, I probably would never finish writing the book. And to top that off, on my way back to take my daughter back to BYU, our car died. Our main minivan, most reliable vehicle, completely, you know, gave up the ghost. I left it in some little town in Idaho, rented a car, and we went on our merry way, but I knew when I got back, we were going to have to buy a new car. So that was another big expense. And, you know, I really should be working. But I just kind of exercised a little faith and thought, if the Lord wants me to do this, and I really felt he did, then I would do it and he would take care of me. So I really believe that that has happened. So I wanted to find a way to help, because I could tell parents were not having this conversation early enough. And I wanted to find a very comfortable way for them to open this conversation. And so I linked arms with my dear friend and licensed psychologist, Dr. Gail Pointer, and we wrote Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Pornproofing Today's Young Kids, to fill what really was a much-needed, you know, a resource gap. So, and there still isn't anything else out there like our book. It's not a religious book, but as one person, one woman told me, she felt like the Proclamation on the Family really undergirds the whole book, and it does. So that's how I got started, trying to help parents prevent an involvement with pornography in their young children.
Cool. Now, I know your book goes through, there's several chapters, I guess you could call them, on how the brain works in relation to pornography and teaching children that these aren't just, you know, pictures, but they're actually mind-altering pictures and addictive pictures. And so is this, would you say, obviously there's some science behind it. Is it for mainly a guide for parents, or is it, like you said, a read aloud book that you sit down and read, or is it kind of a hybrid of both?
Well, it's really a read aloud book for parents to read to young children. It gives parents a script, a very comfortable script that then they add to as they're reading. And I find that a lot of parents, they don't understand this information either. So it's really an education for them to read it to their children. And it also gives children an understanding about addiction. In fact, I was really debating at the beginning whether I should write the first book on just addiction in general and then write a more specialized book for pornography. But my friend, Claudine Gallagher, who has been my right-hand person throughout this whole process, she's my writing coach and my sounding board, as well as Gail, she convinced me that, no, you need to go forward with this book on pornography because it was such a problem, an issue. And you mentioned that, you know, I should imagine I'm talking to bishops, and I have talked with many, many bishops and state presidents and mission presidents. And what I found is that this is one of the biggest problems, if not the biggest problem, that they face with their youth. And so, and I've even had, I hope this doesn't sound too promotional, but I've had bishops contact me, ask for, you know, a bulk price on my book. They've bought, you know, dozens of copies for their own ward to give out. Mm-hmm. And they've used it to train the parents in their ward. So I'm very gratified that it's being helpful to bishops and helpful to parents out there. And I've actually been asked to write additional books, like one dealing specifically with girls, because girls are the fastest growing market for pornography.
Wow.
And several other books. One, many parents have requested that I write a simplified version for 3 to 5 year olds, which is a very kind of sad thing that would be needed, but they feel like with so many little kids using iPads and iPods and these mobile devices, that they want to protect their children from a very young age.
Yeah.
And and kids can understand. They can get simple messages. A 3-year-old can understand, hey, if you ever see pictures of naked people without any clothes on the internet, come tell mommy, come tell daddy. You won't get into trouble at all. We just need you to tell us. You know, even a 3-year-old can be taught that simple definition, that simple level of warning.
Yeah. Now, when you talk with, you know, bishops, state presidents, or the church leaders, do they ask you very similar questions that maybe any parents would ask you, or what type of questions do they ask you?
I think that what they're concerned about is the same thing that parents are concerned about, and that is, you know, if we talk to our children at a young age, will that just foster curiosity in them?
Yeah.
And I think that's the number one hesitation. But if I could make a plea to bishops and stake leaders to say that parents of primary age children need to start now talking to their kids and preparing them to know how to reject pornography. Prevention is key. It is so important. And if we want to overcome this problem as a church, we really need to stop underestimating our kids. They were sent, you know, down at this time by Heavenly Father, who knew they were strong enough to handle these challenges. They just need the tools and the resources and the encouragement that we as parents and grandparents and leaders can provide. And if we teach them what pornography is, why it's dangerous, and teach them the skills that they need to know so they know how to reject it, they'll be able to do that. And they'll be able to be successful in protecting themselves from pornography.
Yeah.
I would also like to mention at this point that the church has really been working on this. I know they have the overcomingpornography.org website.
Mm-hmm.
And on that website, there's lots of great resources. I'll just name two. If you go to the resources tab on that website, you're going to see a section called Family Home Evening. And the church has put together 4 family home evening lessons. And I would encourage every bishop to encourage their parents to go through these lessons
Oh, great.
With their entire families. And there's another resource on there, and it's under, it's like how to have sensitive, how to talk about sensitive topics. You know, they never say the word sex there, but really what it is, it's all these little videos that instruct parents on how to talk about sex with their kids.
Yeah.
And really, parents need to be the experts on sex, because if they aren't, kids are going to be curious and they're going to go to their friends and the internet. They're going to Google it because that's what they see us doing. And they're going to find out. They're going to be curious. So we need to set ourselves up as parents as the experts and be open so that our kids feel comfortable. And if you do that at a young age, and if you set the stage at a young age, kids will, they won't know to be embarrassed or ashamed. So they have some great videos, and I have a blog called Porn Proof Kids. And so you can go to my blog. Perfect. I have a lot of information on how to talk to kids, lots of resources, lots of great information, and it's all there. So I would invite people to go to the overcomingpornography.org as well as pornproofkids.org and just become educated so they can educate their kids.
Perfect. And I think the key word you said there was comfortable, right? And once you position yourself as the parent, or as the parent, as you position yourself as the expert, and not only that, but make it comfortable to talk about, you know, sex and pornography, that then they're more likely to come to you when they do stumble across those pictures or are in a uncomfortable situation at school where these topics are brought up. And I think that's key, to be the first one to mention those words rather than having the child discover a word or an image and then seeking an explanation. And you know, there's always the humorous moments you see on sitcoms and things when the child comes to the parent with a tough question about sex. But in reality, the more matter-of-factly the parent is and comfortable they are, the more likely that discussion will happen down the road when they do stumble across those things. And then the other thing I like what you said was don't underestimate your children, especially with technology. You know, me and my wife just laugh as our 2-year-old, who's almost 3, can grab our phone and navigate it as if she's, our age, and, you know, find the Netflix or find the pictures or whatever it is. And so it's important to have those conversations as soon as you can, I guess. And so that leads to my next question is is there a magic age when you start discussing these things with your children? My oldest is 3 right now, and or soon to be. And so when do I need to start thinking about having these, obviously not long drawn out discussions, but at least start the theme?
I say that it's not the age, it's when they first have access to the internet. So your 3-year-old has access to the internet.
Yeah.
If they have their, an iPad or whatever, if they have that. And 3 years old is not too early. You know, we start teaching our little 3-year-olds about the gospel.
Yeah.
And doctrine, right? So they can understand a lot at 3 years old. I think, again, just simply saying, if you ever see something on the internet, like, and you have to describe it like people without any clothes on, please come and tell mommy or daddy. And that should be just an initial thing where you can warn them and ask them to come to you. So many children that see pornography do not come and tell their parents. They kind of feel ashamed about it. They think they might get in trouble. And so they don't, they may even lie.
Yeah.
I've had several parents tell me that their kids have lied to them because he just didn't know that it was okay to talk about. So that's why we have to open up the conversation with them. And I've had parents read good pictures, bad pictures to kids as young as 4 and as old as 17. I've had parents who read this book to their children on the autism spectrum and how much it helps them because they're very impulsive. And so it helps them to learn about their brain. We talk about the thinking brain and the feeling brain and how the thinking brain needs to stay in control. And so that's all very helpful. So you need to begin talking with your children on a very low level and then just adding and layering on information as they get older. You never want to have just one big porn talk and then be done with it.
Right.
That's almost the worst thing you can do because they will have questions. And if they don't feel like, hey, you know, come to me with questions, you have to tell them, come and tell me when you see this. Come and ask questions. And another thing that pulls kids into pornography is they'll hear a word or a term used at school. And they don't know what it is. They don't know what it means, but they're very sensitive to looking like an idiot, right?
Yeah.
They don't want to look like they don't know what it means.
Yeah.
So they come home and they'll get on the, if they can, get on the internet and they'll look it up. And many times these are sexual slang words. So another thing, tell the parents to tell their kids that, hey, if you hear something at school that you don't understand what it is, come and tell me and we'll find out the answer together. Because sometimes it's a little dangerous for you to look on your own.
Yeah, perfect. And even
that's another,
even the the only thing more important than communicating, talking with children about this is doing it consistently. And that way they're, like you said, not having this just one big, avoid pornography and sex talk at one moment, but do it consistently. So that again and again, they have opportunity to ask those questions when they do hear a word at school and are able to open up and just get direct answers from, again, the experts, the parents.
And kids are very, you know, kids need to learn line upon line, right? Precept upon precept.
Yeah.
And that's how we learn too, even as adults. So we can't, and pornography is a constant in their lives. There are studies that show that parents underestimate the negative experiences that kids can have online. And so it's important to realize that when they're at school, I have heard so many stories of kids, young kids, kindergarten kids, being exposed to pornography by third graders who have smartphones.
Yeah.
You cannot completely protect them from that. All you can do is train them and set up the situation so that they will come to you, that they know it's open door policy and they know that you're not going to freak out.
Right.
That's another thing. Don't freak out. Just be calm. Like put on a science lab coat, you know, and just be very matter of fact.
Yeah.
Because really, that's what kids need. You will set the tone. If you're all embarrassed and ashamed about it, that's how they learn that, oh, this is an embarrassing topic.
Yeah.
But if you're matter of fact about it and willing to, for example, use correct terminology for body parts from the time they're 1 year old, you know, then they are going to feel more comfortable. You're going to feel more comfortable and it's going to have a much better outcome than if you just cannot even bring it up.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point is important of another reason to talk to children earlier is, you know, I think most people, they default to the teenage years when puberty's happening and then some of these sexual feelings are coming to the surface. And then it's just like, it's a lot harder to have a conversation because the teenager doesn't want to talk about this. Like, oh, mom, stop it, you know, where it, at a young age, it's just as normal as any other conversation. And then being raised with those conversations, you know, by the teenage years, it's like, well, I get it, Mom, and I don't mind having these conversations.
Yeah, you know, one of our original beta readers for our book is a licensed social worker, and she has worked with kids that have these issues. But when she read the book to her boys, her young boys, I think they were 8 and 6, she said that, you know, within minutes of beginning this book, we were discussing pornography with the same ease with which we have talked to our kids about drugs, alcohol, or stranger dangers.
Yeah.
And by the end of the book, our 10-year-old son was discussing our family's specific action plan to protect us from the dangers of pornography. Kids get excited about this. And it's interesting, you know, I wrote the book really for parents to read to the kids. I didn't actually know if the kids would love it, but kids actually love it. They love feeling empowered.
Yeah.
And trusted. And that's what this book does. It gives them the ability, it gives them information, and it gives them a plan.
Yeah.
And it's just a very comfortable way to approach it. And I'm not saying that parents have to use my book to do this, but you have to do the same things, which is introduce it, define it, and give your kids a plan to deal with it when they see it.
Yeah. So, all right, Chris, I'm going to throw you a curveball here, and I don't mean to, but it's a sincere question I have as parents talk with children about pornography and about, you know, sexual topics, could it also do damage in the other direction where it scares the child of anything related to sex to the point where as they grow up and mature and then have an appropriate, you know, sexual interaction in their marriage that then later causes problems? Like, is there this balance where we also need to not only talk about the dangers of pornography and, you know, appropriate places and uses of sex, but also talk about the benefits that sex plays in a marriage and how it strengthens love and these things? So, I mean, what are your thoughts there?
Yes, that's great. And it's not something that we mentioned this in the introduction to our book.
Okay.
And we also have a whole chapter called The Attraction Center, and we talk about the healthy use of the healthy purpose of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the thing. Porn is not sex, right?
Right.
Now, you think it is. Porn tells a lot of lies about sex. And if we can teach our children, when I do presentations, I teach the difference between what Heavenly Father wants for our sexuality and marriage and how sex is beautiful and it's kind and loving and it bonds two people together, a husband and a wife, and it's uplifting and empowering, whereas pornography is the exact opposite, and it teaches all these lies about pornography.
Yeah, it's truly the counterfeit, right?
It's the counterfeit. So yes, I say teach your children healthy attitudes about sexuality so that they can recognize the lies that porn is teaching about sexuality. And the sad thing is that kids grow up thinking that porn is, you know, their sex ed and that they need to watch it so they know how to do it. And it's so sad because porn teaches kids to be disrespectful, porn isolates people and ruins marriages and teaches that sex is really just a recreational activity,
yeah,
and you really don't want any emotional connection.
Yeah, or a form of abuse that, you know, there needs to be a level of abuse during sex, right?
Right. So yes, you definitely want to teach your kids the opposite side of the coin, which is healthy attitudes about sexuality, what's the healthy purpose to it, so that and they know pornography contains all these lies and will not set them up for a happy marriage.
Perfect. Now, you sent me a list, and I love some of these, and I think you've touched on them, but a lot of these misconceptions that we have, many myths surrounding pornography in the church, and that maybe youth in the church naturally pick up on, not because somebody taught it them directly, but they sort of added the sum of all the information they've been given, and these are sort of the ideas they take away. So maybe go through some of those. What are some of the myths that you see that whether youth or parents have around this topic?
Well, one we just talked about, that they believe pornography equals sex education. And they don't realize that porn wires their brain for a totally different sexual arousal template. It sets them up to crave constant novelty, right? I mean, how is that going to help you when you're married for time and all eternity to one person?
Yeah.
It doesn't. In fact, they've taught their brain to get bored with one person. Pornography teaches them to see sex as a solitary event because, of course, people masturbate to porn. And that is a problem because that actually releases the neurochemicals that flood your brain when you have a real sexual experience with your spouse versus a masturbatory sexual experience. Those are very different. And in fact, that kind of, and I don't want to get into deep in the biochemistry here, but the differing amounts cause of these different chemicals cause you to want it more because it gives you more dopamine, but it gives you less endorphins. So while you want it more, you're less satisfied.
Yeah.
So then you keep going back, chasing that, as the addiction develops, you have to up the ante and get into more extreme and novel forms of pornography. So where some young men, especially, I guess I would say, although I'm sure there are girls that see this too, but they see it as a stopgap strategy for staying chaste until marriage. Like, well, we can't have sex with, real people. We have to stay chaste. So this is what we do. We just masturbate to porn. That relieves, our sexual stress, and that, that keeps us chaste. But what they don't know is that they're rewiring their brain to really have a very difficult time in their marriage. Well, that leads to this whole idea that, porn addiction will go away the minute you get married and you have real sex. Okay, so because porn is about sex, right? So once you have real sex, then you won't need to do porn anymore.
Right.
But again, porn wires your brain for a completely different sexual experience than real sex with your spouse, someone that you love and respect and want to treat kindly. So there was this is many years ago. They did a study with a survey of divorce lawyers in America, asking them, how many of their cases involved pornography addiction. And turns out 62% of the cases that they had dealt with in the last year were caused by, at least in part, a pornography addiction. And that was in 2002, I think.
Wow.
So think about what's happened in the last 12 years. I mean, the iPhone came out in 2007, which is a complete game changer, right?
Right.
So now it's all mobile. And so that's another thing. It won't go away because kids use porn as a stress reliever. I mean, it begins as a curiosity, but they quickly find out that it relieves stress. In the short term, it's very effective.
Yeah.
So they do this, and the thing is this, if that's what you're using to deal with stress or any other kinds of negative emotions, well, when you get in a marriage and you're newly married, I don't know about you, but that first few years, you really had to work a lot of things out. And there was a certain amount of stress with your spouse to know how to communicate and all these things. And then there are stresses of maybe a child comes into the marriage, maybe there's finishing school, getting a job, all these stressors that you have. And so if your go-to method of stress relief is masturbating to porn, then it's only going to get worse. And that's what I've found as I've talked to many people that have been addicted to pornography, that when they got married, it actually got worse. The shame of it, you know, now they had to hide it from someone they were like living with. And that increases the shame, and shame fuels pornography addiction. And so all these things make it worse, and it doesn't go away after marriage. It absolutely doesn't. And then the final myth that I see is that good kids, they're active in the church and obedient, you know, they seemingly have strong testimonies, that they would never get into this. And unfortunately, that's not true. Everyone's at risk. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard about, you know, amazing stalwart LDS youth who get addicted to using pornography, and they just keep it very hidden. And often they may not even tell their bishop or their stake president, but I'll tell you where it comes out when these kids go on missions. Very stressful. It can be very stressful on a mission. And so mission presidents are finding, and they did not see this coming. They did not realize. I talked to one mission president's wife. She said 80% of their elders had struggled with an addiction to pornography. So, and they were good. I mean, one of them was an AP in the mission. I mean, they were good men, good young men. You know, it's different. It's not that you're a bad person, but if you were exposed to pornography and pulled in as a 6-year-old, it's like saying you're bad if you get diabetes.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's a physical addiction in the brain, and you're not necessarily a bad person because you were curious and you got pulled into this. I guess I used to think people who are porn addicts were like creepy, but actually many of them are not.
Right.
They're victims in many ways. If they got pulled in as a young child, it's tough for them, because their prefrontal cortex is not developed, and they have less ability to say no, to turn away. And they don't have knowledge if no one's ever talked to them about it. So that's just another myth that we have.
Wow, those are great. And going back to the first one you mentioned of youth that believe, you know, porn is just another method of sexual education. And it makes me think back, and you mentioned this dynamic of being, socially accepted or being in the know, you know, when you're a youth. And it makes me think back to my time in junior high where, you know, I'd hear a casual, conversation, you know, in the classroom, and think, and then you start feeling alone. Like, I'm the only person in the school who hasn't figured this out. And, I don't know what to do. And I want to be cool, you know, and I want to be in the know with everybody else. And then as these ideas are perverted, you then tend to think, that casual sexual relations is almost a deeper form of social interaction, right? That society, because they can have multiple partners, means that oh, well, maybe it's something I need to consider because I need to be socially accepted on a deeper level. I mean, obviously it doesn't happen that quickly, but these are just some false ideas that are out there. But I'd never really considered that as, you know, as youth are considering it or going to it simply with an innocent intent of, I just want to be in the know. I just want to be educated, and I don't want to go to my mom and have her tell me about it, you know? So I think that's a great point. And then, as a bishop, countless times have I heard this idea of like, Bishop, I just need to get married. If I get married, then I'll have an outlet for this, you know, it won't be a problem. And, you know, over the years, I've been getting better at stopping them there and saying, okay, before we go any further, we need to get rid of that idea, because that's not a good plan. That won't work, you know? So those are great.
Yeah. And kids in, I talked to a young man who said that all his friends, he didn't live in Utah. In fact, he lived on the East Coast, and he said that, you know, his friends were very concerned that he wasn't looking at pornography. First of all, he decided at a fairly young age, his mom had explained some of this to him from a young age. And so he decided at a very young age that it wouldn't be fair to his wife, his future wife, if he looked at pornography. And I'll tell you, whoever gets to marry that young man is a very lucky young woman. But the thing is his friends would say, hey, you know, you need to do this. You need to, like, masturbate on a daily basis, because otherwise you'll get prostate cancer. You know, and these bizarre things that are out there. Yeah. I'm not kidding you. There are these quote-unquote studies, you know, by these pro-porn people that say, oh, yeah, it's really, you know, important to do. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But kids are hearing these things. And they are, you know, again, his friends would say, but you got to know how to do this. And, you know, girls watch it because they feel like they have to know what's expected of them. And so porn truly has become sex education in the worst way for, you know, our teenagers. But kids, you know, can be warned. They can be given the skills to keep their brains protected from this, and parents can get in there and help them understand, you know, what to do when they're exposed to pornography.
Perfect. Just a few closing questions before we end. I know we're short on time, but just pivoting back to the concept of leadership, obviously, again, this podcast is focused on becoming and developing leadership skills within the LDS context. So what proactive measures does a bishop or a primary president need to take? I mean, is this something that should be discussed on some level in primary, or in obviously with the consent of parents and things, or is it, I'm sort of taking away from this interview that maybe the role of a bishop or a primary president is more towards the parents, to giving them resources so that they can learn and effectively approach their children about this topic. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, because parents are the ultimate, you know, they have the ultimate responsibility for this. I guess if I were a bishop or a leader, I would pull all my parents together that had primary age children at a meeting, a fireside, something, and I'd work very hard to get them all out, and I would teach them these principles and help them find ways. I have blog posts on, you know, comfortable ways to initiate a conversation with kids, but I would definitely teach them what I call the can-do plan. So can I quickly go through that?
Yeah.
That's really a big, important part of our book, but I talk about it all the time. So this is it. C-A-N-D-O. First, close your eyes. Teach a child that the longer they look at an image, the more it's burned into their brain and the harder it will be to get rid of it. So close your eyes. turn over the iPad, turn it off. Don't necessarily try to like get out of the page. Just turn it off and go tell your parents, which is the second step, which is always tell a trusted adult. When kids don't tell, there's a certain amount of shame that grows and secrecy, and all of that fuels pornography addiction. So always tell a trusted adult. When I see something that I didn't mean to see, that a pop-up or something when I'm researching, I tell my husband, and he does the same with me. So I'd say this is for couples as well.
Yeah.
Whenever you're exposed, just make it a habit. Tell your spouse, tell a trusted adult. Next thing is name it when you see it. When you say, that's pornography, even if you're watching TV, if you're in a grocery store, if you're at the mall, when you say that's pornography, it's labeling it. So then the thinking brain can have a much better time of rejecting it. When you see a pornographic image, the feeling brain is already engaged. It's like, wah, you know, and that's where your sexual center is.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to name it and label it so the kids can like, oh, okay, yeah, that's pornography, and this is what I do. I'm going to look away, and I'm going to tell my mom or my dad. And then the last two, so those are the three things that you do immediately. But then the last two, the D and the O, are steps that are very, very important skills to learn because they deal with the aftermath of pornography exposure. And you know that when you see something pornographic, it makes a very strong memory. And so kids need to learn how to deal with these memories. So first of all, they distract their thoughts and they redirect their thoughts, think about something else that's also exciting for them. So I love going snorkeling with all those beautiful tropical fish, you know, in Hawaii. And I've only done it a couple times, but that's where I go when I'm trying to minimize a memory of a pornography or a pornographic image that keeps popping up in my brain. Kids really need to know how to deal with this. You can't just say, you know, say one prayer and it's done. No, you have to practice this over and over. And whatever is exciting for the child to think about, that's what they need to go to. And then the last one is order your thinking brain to be the boss. And kids love this idea that they can keep their thinking brain in charge. And in fact, this principle of the thinking brain and the feeling brain is really very useful to parents in many kinds of parenting situations. But for kids, if they can have this conversation in their brain that goes something like this, feeling brain, I know you're curious to see those bad pictures, but I am going to use my thinking brain and keep it in charge so that I avoid getting addicted to pornography and seeing those bad things. So as they have that conversation in their brain, in their mind, it helps to differentiate. It helps to acknowledge that, yes, they may be curious, but they are going to use their thinking brain to stay in control. And that's a big part of what we teach in the book, is to how to help kids to strengthen their thinking brain. And just one last note on that, many of the things we do in the church do help to strengthen the prefrontal cortex. Meditation, pondering, fasting, all of those things, and study, you know, study the scriptures, all those things really help to strengthen the prefrontal cortex of the brain.
Wow, that is awesome. A perfect acronym for children to follow and know how to, and just even having a plan. You know, most parents don't know what to tell their kid, you know, just stop it. But to be able to present a plan about how to process, you know, these experiences when they come across pornography. And wow, what a valiant cause you're involved in.
Well, thank you.
And
I feel like I was very inspired with a plan. I mean, I come up with all these steps, and then as I went to really try to simplify it, I just felt like it flowed.
Good.
So the can-do plan is is, I think, very powerful. It's easy for kids to learn. It's easy for them to remember. And if we had more time, I'd tell you all kinds of experiences of parents that they taught their kids a can-do plan, their kid was exposed, they knew exactly what to do, and they felt so much better knowing exactly how to deal with that experience. So it works.
I'd like to thank Kristen again for taking the time to being on the Leading LDS podcast. She speaks across the country on topics of the influences of pornography on young children. So if you'd like to contact her to do a fireside or read some of her recent articles, you can find her at pornproofkids.com. That's pornproofkids.com. If the topics and conversations on Leading LDS has helped you become a better leader and you would like this resource to grow, I encourage you to check out some of the products on leadinglds.com. One of those being the Consequence Stick, and another one, our newest product, the Food Order Reference Guide. Check it out at leadinglds.com, and hopefully they improve your leadership. I'm always looking for new ideas and unique approaches that might be happening in your ward. If you feel like you or you know somebody who's a leader that makes a difference, please contact me at leadinglds.com/contact and let me know. If your idea is making a difference in your ward, it should make a difference in many wards. So please contact me. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.